I have to confess that I enjoy action movies. Even some of the Marvel Comics movies and many that come out of Hollywood are called action, but to be honest, they're just full of blood and gore and violence, if you want to be really sincere about it. And these quote-unquote action movies are almost always rooted in a sense of vengeance. They'll call it justice, but really it's vengeance. It's more than an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Is you did this to me and I'm going to destroy everything about you. And we have heroes that come out of these movies, like The Punisher and countless others, where the hero is the one who comes and brings vengeance upon his enemies. And you know, when you watch these movies, they're very popular. Millions of people pay to see them. And there's a certain satisfaction, if we're going to be really honest about how we feel, when we see someone who's been wronged get their payback. And bring vengeance. We like to call it justice because we know vengeance can't be right, but justice sounds correct. I mean, God is just, right? The problem is, if we live by the rule of an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, everyone ends up blind and toothless. And when we consider vengeance, we're realizing that we're taking things in our own hands. Forget the police or God. I'm going to be the punisher, the bringer of vengeance to these people. I'm going to make them pay for the wrong they've done. And there's something satisfying about it because there is an underlying sense of immediate pleasure and delight psychologically, and a false sense of justice. And somehow I had my hand in it. We feel like we've taken control. We've taken power. We've brought things back to order, if you will, and pushed back those who have harmed us. But in reality, we're thinking as the earthly man does, as Paul says in the second reading today, and we're choosing to be God in his place. Today's teachings from the gospel are, without question, the most difficult of all of Jesus' teachings. They don't seem to make sense, and it seems ridiculous to do this, since more than many domestic abusive persons have used this gospel to justify and require, quote unquote, their spouse to forgive them and let them come back home. Whether it was another night of beatings or emotional verbal abuse or another act of infidelity or another abuse of drugs or alcohol, you have to forgive me. 7 times 77. You're a Christian. You have to let me back in the home. And we sense in the depth of our soul, something's not right here. Is this meant to be taken literally? What do we do? You know, at the heart of Jesus' teachings, and the only way it can possibly make sense, is if we believe that he is God, and we trust that he will do what he says. If we don't believe he is God, and we don't trust that he will do as he says, then we have to take things in our own hands. What else are we going to do? Let the evil continue doing what they do to destroy our lives? But if we trust that he is God, and we believe that he will do what he says, then Christ's teachings make all the sense in the world. Because God will bring a greater justice to those who do evil than the police or ourselves. God will restore things in right order more effectively than the largest army or police force or the most capable person could. When God is in control, while it might not happen in this life, we are certain in faith it will in the next. Each will receive the measure with which they have measured out. So the gospel concludes today with Jesus' words. But when we hear this gospel, sometimes the first thing that comes to mind when someone strikes you on the cheek, give them the other, is the many stories or firsthand experiences that we've suffered at the hands of people who are abusive, the perpetual theft, thief, the person who is constantly abusing and using drugs, or the person who is repeatedly unfaithful to their spouse. We hear this gospel and we think we have to keep forgiving them and taking them in. But that contradicts reason itself. You see, Christ's teachings are never meant to supplant or denigrate our human dignity. Jesus doesn't contradict himself. And so when we're living with someone who's perpetually unfaithful, refuses to get help for their addiction or severe mental illness, or who is addicted to gambling or alcohol or drugs or infidelities of sorts, we're required to protect and preserve our human dignity, mind, body, and soul, our goods that God has given us, and our children. And having someone like that in the home day in and day out is a severe and grave danger and threat to their safety and well-being, including, of course, the person who is domestically abusive, physically, verbally, or emotionally. As Christians, we're required to protect our human dignity, to set up healthy boundaries, because you can't be living a life of forgiveness if you're constantly being injured. At some point, the injury must stop in order for us to process emotionally and make the choice to forgive. And so it is not contrary to Christ's teachings today to call the police, to expel someone from the home, and to set healthy boundaries and to separate if necessary, or even divorce. It would not be considered a sin, according to the Catechism of the Catholic Church, in such instances, to protect our health and well-being, that of our children and our goods, so that we can move forward in honoring our dignity, caring for ourselves as God has commanded us to, and move through that process of forgiveness. To forgive is not because the person has changed, not because they've asked for it, not because they've reconciled with you. When we forgive those who have done harm to us, it's for our sake. It's because we deserve it, not them. Forgiveness is a choice that we make to say, I will not allow you who have hurt me to continue to have power over me by holding on to the anger and the bitterness and the resentment every time I think of you. When we cling to unforgiveness, we give power of that person over our peace and well-being. We're robbed of joy. We're robbed of happiness and peace. And we choose to cling to the hatred and vitriol and animosity toward that person rooted in the wound they caused us, giving them power over us even decades after they're dead. Why would we give somebody that kind of power and allow them to continue to rob us of our peace and joy even years after their death? They don't deserve it, and neither do we. So when we forgive, we choose to make that choice for our sake. I no longer give you power over me. I forgive you for my sake because I deserve it and I need it to be happy. I've set boundaries to protect myself and my loved ones, to do everything in my power to make sure this doesn't happen again. And I move forward with the help of God. Even understanding this idea, many people struggle to make those steps. It's not easy. It's easier said than done. But we cannot give what we do not have. And so the frequency with which we go to the sacrament of confession gives us the strength and the ability from receiving from God mercy for our own sins to be able to forgive others, to see in their ongoing problems or issues a reflection of ourselves in our own life and struggle with sin. And as frequently as we go to the sacrament of confession, receiving mercy, the greater we have of that mercy and compassion to show toward others. Look, we would love to see justice in our lifetime. That may or may not happen. But ultimately, if we trust and believe in God, as a God who is kind and merciful, but also gracious and just, then we know that he will do far better at bringing that justice and peace in the world than we could, or any army or police force. In today's first reading, King David was accompanied by one person, and he was being pursued by Saul. David wasn't king yet. He was being pursued by King Saul and an army of 3,000 men. The goal of these 3,000 men under Saul was to kill David. He was literally running for his life. Innocent, Saul, filled with rage and jealousy over David's success in battle, although Saul was the king. David runs for his life, but on one night, God puts Saul and his army into a deep sleep, using the same word that God used for Adam when he put him to sleep to take a rib from his side to create Eve. And somehow, by God's grace only, David and Abishai was able to walk through 3,000 men and stand over the body of Saul, and could have easily killed him with his own spear, the most humiliating way to die. But David recognizes that Saul is God's anointed. Even though Saul is filled with murderous thoughts and vengeance, jealousy and rage, and he would not harm him. That is the Lord's work, not mine. But David does take his spear and water jug to humiliate him later and show him, I could have killed you, but I chose not to, because I fear God more than you. I could have easily justified killing you. You're trying to kill me, and I'm just protecting myself. If I kill you, this would stop, and I would be safe. But David entrusts himself to the protection of God himself. God certainly giving David this opportunity to kill his enemy, but David choosing mercy and compassion over justice or vengeance. And God rewards David because of it. Saul eventually is killed, and David becomes king, the most successful and wealthy and powerful king in all the history of Israel to this day, because he trusted in the Lord and the Lord's justice and imitated the Lord's compassion and mercy, a compassion and mercy that David would greatly appreciate later on as king when he facilitates the death of the woman with whom he commits adultery, the death of the husband of the woman with whom he commits adultery. God showed David compassion in that moment, just as David showed his enemy Saul compassion. We cannot give what we do not receive, but what we give, we will certainly receive on the day of our death. As Jesus reminds us today, for the measure with which you measure will in return be measured out to you. At the end of the day, there's no question that today's gospel is of the most difficult teachings of Jesus, especially if we don't trust him and we don't believe in him and if we don't go to confession with frequency. But if we choose to make these decisions, to frequent the sacrament of confession, to pray for the grace to trust and to believe in God with all of our heart, mind, soul, and being, then these words are a path to freedom. Freedom from anger, freedom from misery, freedom from vengeance, freedom in order to experience the joy that God promises and the love and compassion he desires for us. Because as we receive, so we can give. Love your enemies. Do good to them. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful.